what does it mean to be a man? When did things get so confusing? And how do we fix it? Let's talk about it with Stephen Mansfield on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
We're so glad you're here. You always have a place at our table. Or in our homes, as it were. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy, and we're so glad you're here. Our favorite mega church pastor, Zach Van Dyke, is here. Recently, he exercised his legs and his First Amendment rights by joining a walk downtown Orlando. How did that go, Zach?
It went really good. It was a bunch of churches in the area. Did a walk for mourning and repentance and prayer, and it was great.
And we did the same thing out our way, too. I guess maybe y'all, you were at that one, weren't you, Kathy?
I did. I went. Yep.
Okay. Matthew Porter's with us. Matthew does not have COVID-19. Unfortunately, he has contracted disco fever.
What?
You, how you feeling?
I'm staying alive.
No.
And I know that was coming.
And our producer, Jinx, is working hard in his little glass booth. Are you in some beatnik coffee shop, Jinx? Yeah. It's so dark, I can't tell.
It's some flashing lights.
It's with the red light, Jinx.
The rock and roll guy.
I've
got to have
special effects.
Where
you were and would know how to pray for you. Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John hasn't been in the office since the quarantine started, so we can't be 100% sure that he hasn't replaced himself with a robot. I told him before you guys came on, we were talking, you know, I said, I've forgotten what you look like. And he brought his picture up. So, and he's
is somebody feeding his fish?
What was that?
Kathy, are you feeding his fish for him?
No. And you know, I broke into his office. Actually, I used a key, but I broke into his office yesterday to see if there was any Diet Dr. Pepper there, because he has this little concession stand, which he has blatantly ignored for the last 12 weeks or whatever. And I looked at that fish tank and I thought, I sure hope he took those little suckers home with him, because otherwise it's not going to be pretty in there.
Sounds like an intra-office riot. In
I know, right?
It does. If you burned the building down, we wouldn't have to go to work. This is kind of nice being at home. It's snow days without snow. Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. Many years ago, George asked himself, what would Jesus do? And then he grew a beard. And Kathy Wyatt, of course, is the soft feminine side of the program. How soft and feminine? Well, enough to single-handedly balance out this mob of manliness.
Gosh.
Speaking of that, Mansfield and manliness, that goes together. Stephen Mansfield is one of our favorite people. He has a doctorate in history. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. Books like The Faith of Barack Obama, The Faith of George Bush, Lincoln's Battle with God, The Character and Greatness of Winston Churchill. He's the founder of the Mansfield Group, a speaker training firm. He is also an in-demand speaker and consultant. And his latest book is kind of doesn't fit all of the other books that we've talked to him about, is Men on Fire, Restoring the Forces That Forge Noble Manhood. Stephen, I mean, has this been a passionate subject for you that we didn't know about? And you got mad at the feminization of men and you decided to say something? Are you crazy?
I am crazy, but I'm not mad. No, this has been a passion of mine for a while. It actually came out of my reading and study and writing about history. I wrote about great men past, Lincoln, Churchill, you know, even elements of this in George Bush's life. And I began looking at the men around me. And so I wrote a book called Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. And that helped feed a global men's movement. And then I wrote a little book called Building Your Band of Brothers. But there was just something that was incomplete. It just wasn't quite there. I still saw men, even men trying to be good men, even men maybe in a church somewhere or with a band of brothers trying to be good men. There was something missing. And I realized it was these fires that I talk about in this book. It was these personal elements that hadn't been rekindled. So that's why I wrote this book.
I got a chance to look at the one your publisher sent a bunch of copies. We only got one, passed it around, and I looked at it yesterday. And it's really good stuff, and I'll read it later. You know, it's hard to be a man. It's hard to know whether I'm supposed to be girly and sensitive and sweet and nice. There aren't any bears to kill. I don't have to leave the cave in the morning. I'm surrounded by women in my family. I've got a female German shepherd and two daughters and three granddaughters. I'm the only guy around, and it's confusing, frankly. So one of the major reasons we ask you to come on with us is you can help me define myself. When you're as old as I am, you ought to be able to know exactly what it meant to be a man or means to be a man. And this book is going to be really helpful. It is confusing, isn't it, Stephen?
It is. It is. You know, when you have the breakdown of the family, which removes the male models, and then you have society speaking so many different modeling so many different patterns for manhood. It's confusing. I think we ask a great deal of boys, and it's very, very difficult for them. But I think when you start telling a man that he's made for certain purposes, when you start telling him that God created masculinity, and that being a man, being a true man, and using all his gifts is not only a gift to him but a gift to others, then you're taking a step towards noble manhood. And I'm so excited about what I'm seeing happen in the lives of men who are reclaiming a Christian understanding of who they are, an understanding of how God's made them, and then what that's doing for boys as we bring them into a manly culture. So it can be set right. It can be set right, and I'm excited about doing it.
As you know, and if you haven't discovered it, you're going to find out that some people aren't going to be happy with this kind of book. Is the kind of information that you're giving us, is that good for women or bad for them?
It's fantastic for women. In fact, in the introduction, I say to women, look, I understand if this scares you a bit. I understand if the men in your life went off to a conference somewhere and came back with some renewed vision of some version of manhood, and it was abusive or mistreating of you or diminishing of you. I get that. Don't be afraid of this. I'm talking to men about reclaiming the strength of who they are for the good of others and for the glory of God. And you will benefit from this. Society will benefit from this. Your children will benefit from this. So don't be afraid of this. And so, but I certainly understand. And in a society where 20% of all women who go to colleges and universities are abused, and largely by untethered, unfathered, unprincipled men, in a society where we have this plague of Me Too moments, etc., obviously, I understand why women might be afraid of something like this, but I work very hard to get them not to fear me or the message that's in this book.
And if we had gotten it right, the abuse rate would not be so high.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, part of what we model, part of what we say to men, especially young men, with porn, with what's in our movies, with the images of men as dogs, with the images of a supposedly good man hanging out at the pole shoving 20s into some girl's underwear, is, of course, it's going to produce predators. And that's what we produce in this society. I think when our society wakes up to what porn and this kind of vicious manhood, domineering manhood, manipulating manhood produces, when we wake up to it, I think women are going to riot. Because of course they're the victims of it. They're the victims of the bad version of manhood that we have so much in our society. And again, I want what I'm doing and the movement that I'm part of to help be the answer to it.
You know, and we're probably not going to have a lot of time to talk about this, but when you talk to Christian men, you have an anchor. You can say, listen, this is something that's in the created order by the Creator. But as you know, we live in a culture where most of the people are not Christian, don't profess to be Christian, and are angry at Christians. Do you have a message to them too? And how do you phrase it in a way that they can hear?
Well, I spend a lot of time with non-Christians, obviously, in what I do and on university campuses and in politics. And I tell them, well, now I'm a Christian, so I think this came from God. But even if you think it came from evolutionary sources or your own socialization, let me ask you this question. How's that working for you? Is it working out for you? Are you really fulfilled as a man? Well, let's talk about why not.
Oh, man. You guys don't want to miss a bit of this. And you say, I'm going to turn it off. I am of the female gender. No, you got to listen too. Because sometimes guys won't listen to anybody but you, and you can kick posteriors and say, get this book and read it, and you'll be easier to live with. The name of the book, by the way, is Men on Fire, Restoring the Forces That Forge Noble Manhood. It's by Stephen Mansfield, and he and we will return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and we're talking with Stephen Mansfield. And his latest book is called Men on Fire, Restoring the Forces That Forge Noble Manhood. And if you missed the first section, Stephen said that this is a book that women should rise up and call him blessed for having written, because this is a way to fix some really bad stuff that has gone on in our culture. And we're going to get into some of the meat of the book. But before the break, Steve and I'd ask you about those who weren't believers, and you said that when you talk to them, you say, how's it working for you if you want to do it your way, and maybe I can help. What kind of response do you get to that?
Well, I get the response that you would expect to get, I would get, given the surveys out there and the polls that are out there. Male suicide is at an all-time high. The loneliness that men report, the friendlessness, is sky high, and of course contributes to that male suicide rate. For most men, they say it's not working. They might have the occasional night out or the week, you know, of the binge or the whatever. A girl might make them happy for a while, but for the most part, that kind of dog-oriented, drives-oriented, lust-oriented version of manhood does not satisfy. So they may not accept my view that it's not satisfying them because they haven't found God's purpose for their manhood, for what it means to be a man, but they're at least accepting the fact that there's some better way to go, and they're willing to hear me talk about it. So I try to do you know, that thing where you hold up the mirror and say, how's this working for you? And most guys will step up honestly and say, it's not. I'm miserable, but this is the only manhood I've ever been handed.
Yeah.
Stephen, as an historian, I mean, you suggested that things are at an all-time high, you know, getting worse and so forth, which would suggest, you know, there's some historical trend here. When do you identify that it our real problems, current problems, have really started?
Well, it's interesting. One of the best books that I've ever read about men and American culture is called The Feminization of American Culture, and it's written by a female historian at Columbia. And she actually starts far before most of us would. She says that when we began to see a real crisis of manhood in America, it was in the late 1800s when theological liberalism began to pervade the nation's churches. And she says that that's when there ceased to be the beefy content coming from Scripture and from most pulpits that informed what manhood ought to be. In fact, there was a huge surge and a concern about this very issue. Theodore Roosevelt wrote about the strenuous life. He was concerned about the urbanization of the American male and how it was turning him into, you know, what we might call today pansies. And so there was a strong move at Harvard that he was part of. William James was part of it. That tried to restore the lost manhood that was happening because of theological liberalism and the loss of the frontier and the urbanization of men. And I think that continued until the 60s. Obviously, we can talk about the 60s for hours and what that did to sexual ethics and a vision of manhood. And I think we've had another phase of that just recently where scholars, it's mainly on the university campuses, begin to talk about how gender is a social construct. And you know, we all know what's happened recently that's somewhat silly. You know, a three-year-old child ought to be able to choose his gender. And of course, that just removes all of the God-given definitions of masculinity. So I think those three phases, the late 1800s, which I know is a surprise to a lot of people, again, the 60s, the upheavals, the sexual revolution of the 60s, and then just in the last decade and a half or so, where we've begun to have this scholarly revolution on the university campuses that has to do with what gender is and gender choices and so on. All of that is working against us.
Sounds like we're lemmings heading for the cliff. Do we have leaders to say, stop, you know, this is crazy? Are most leaders intimidated with a narrative and don't feel they can say anything?
Well, there are always those who are cowardly, always those who, you know, don't think that criticism is automatically evil, so they shy away. But some of the leaders who are most dynamic in our society, some of the men who are making the most difference are true manly men. They stand in the inner cities. They stand on as coaches of football teams. They stand in their various professions, the pulpit, wherever. They don't have to be famous or on stage to do it. And they model a difference. And I live in D.C. and go to a gigantic, largely African-American church. And you just can't believe what African-American adult men are doing in the African-American community to try to address some of what we know plagues that community with fatherlessness and so on. So my heroes of this movement are men who are largely unknown, but who are making a redemptive difference. So the models are out there. The men are out there working against it. We just need more of them.
Kathy?
Stephen, I'm wondering, speaking obviously as female, women have pretty much always had friendships, and it always seems like those friendships have been significantly important to women, and you always hear that, you know, men don't have the same kind of friendships, et cetera, and friendships are, I would think, are important for men, you know, to have somebody that they can confide in, that they can do life with. Is that true? And is there a movement toward recognizing that and the need for that?
It's absolutely true. And thank you for asking the question. And yeah, that's what we're trying to accomplish here. It's why I wrote that little booklet, Building Your Band of Brothers, to teach men the skills of building significant relationships. It's not a skill that fathers have passed on to their sons like they used to. It's not a way of functioning that men are learning. It's not a part of the lore of manhood. I'll say it very, very quickly. They do studies in which they put little girls in rooms and observe them. And then they put little boys in rooms and observe them. The girls inevitably turn chairs towards each other, look each other straight in the face and say, "I like your hair," and they're best friends forever. That's the end of it. The little boys turn side by side, shoulder to shoulder, look around and go, "I bet we can set that door on fire. I bet we can get Tommy to pull us in that wagon. I bet I can beat you to that tree." So they have to do things together. That's how they bond. They don't bond face to face. That's why in a church context, you circle up men in a fellowship hall and say, "How are you feeling, Fred?" And nobody's coming back the next week. So you're absolutely right. And that's one of the skills we've got to teach in this movement.
Zach?
Man, yeah, I guess a follow-up to that is it was a little bit on the fact that is part of the problem that as men, we don't know what to fight for anymore. Like there's not a common vision of our role in society, in our churches, in our homes. And so without something to fight for, we veer towards apathy, I assume.
Yeah, there's no question, but I teach men to be warriors and tell them that most of their fights will be invisible and that we've got to restore that warrior spirit in their souls.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about just that subject when we get back. Where's the battle? How do you engage in the battle? I do have a gun. I just don't know where to shoot it. But we'll talk about that when we come back. And if anybody asks you what you're listening to, you tell them I'm listening to Steve Brown, etc. And then turn your nose up in the air. Let your peacock feathers fly in the breeze. And then you should say, "And you're not?"
From Key Life comes two mini books, "What Do You Do for a Living?" and "Life After Retirement." "What Do You Do for a Living?" by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. "Life After Retirement" by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. "What Do You Do for a Living?" and "Life After Retirement" can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
You're listening to Steve Brown, etc. We're hanging out with Stephen Mansfield. You can find out more from Stephen, and you ought to go there, StephenMansfield.tv. And you can follow him on Twitter, the sewer of the universe, at Mansfield. Other than that, Brown, what do you think about it? At Mansfield Writes, and you can follow him around and see whether what he's saying is authentic or if he's just faking it. Who's up?
And me. I'm going to just follow up with, we went to break as I asked this question, but I worked with, I was a youth pastor for many years. And one of the things I saw with younger guys is that they would often choose porn or video games as a way to engage because they didn't have a vision for anything better. Like they didn't have something they thought that was worth fighting for. And so often they would settle for these kind of fantasy like battles. And so I'm just wondering, is that a thing that's happening around our country, is just men don't know what they can fight for and what they should fight for. And so they choose apathy.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question about it. The fact is that when we don't teach men how to fight appropriately, both their invisible battles and also to be ready and prepared for any other real and physical battles they have to fight, and when we don't give them sports and the controlled violence, I like to call it, of sports that gives them a form of battle that's not, you know, terminal, They will find alternative approaches to this. We know I've been in a position where I've worked with inner city gangs. There's no question that what's happening is they're giving these guys a fight. They're giving them an enemy. They're giving them somebody to fight for. They're giving them a code and a creed and a weapon and a posse to be part of. And so it's an artificial version of what every man is called to have. I do a lot of work in the Middle East. As you may recall, we've talked about my work with the Kurds before on this program.
Yeah.
There's no question. ISIS is not a bunch of hardened Muslims. ISIS is a bunch of young men, unfathered, impoverished, looking for a cause, looking for a fight, for a path to heaven or to paradise. But for the most part, I have a journalist friend who was held by them for a while when he escaped and went back to England. These guys in ISIS wrote him and said, "Hey, here's a picture of my girlfriend, and here's what we're doing today." They treated him like he was, just like some cool professor at the local university. But these guys are not hardened Muslims. What they are is basically a street gang. They're thugs. But they're mainly young men who somebody was wise enough to give a cause to. So my goal is to give men the kind of cause and the skills of battle that will ennoble them and help others.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about, it kind of goes back to what you've said about some of these things kind of being self-evident. I did some research for gangs, about gangs in the Bronx in like the early 70s. And the same thing hit me that you take away the nuclear family and the male leadership. Everybody still aligns themselves towards this deep need, and they have the initiation and the brotherhood and the conquering an area, the entrepreneurship. I mean, yes, selling drugs are bad, but it's still this kind of, I'm going to fight. And it's so sad, but powerful that just the evidence still underlines that starting thesis that we need men and we need them in leadership positions, leading families, leading young men. I wanted to ask about the fire imagery. You mentioned there were seven fires as kind of the pretext to this whole thing. Could you kind of give us a broad overview of what those fires are and why that imagery?
Yeah, I think that men ought to have, to use the phrase that Robert Louis Stevenson gave us, a fire in the belly. I think they ought to have things burning on the inside of them. Now, we can speak of that in spiritual terms, but let's lay that aside just for the moment, although obviously I believe in that. I think that every man ought to have something from his heritage, from his family line, that's ennobling, that burns in his soul. I think we're made to be, men especially, made to be connected to that comes down through our family lines, made to be connected to the vision and the image and the character of the fathers, broadly speaking. At the same time, I think we're made for friendship. And so as I walk through the world as a man, my noble friendships, my invested friendships, those friendships should be like a fire in my belly. I should be thinking about what they make me want to be. I should be feeling informed and inspired by them. It should be changing me as I walk around, even when those friends aren't near. The same thing with love. I talk about love and how men don't need to let love be captured just by the romance novels, but be aware that a lot of what you are as a man is love, about loving your friends, loving your God, loving your kids, loving your cause, loving your nation, et cetera. And how can a man uniquely keep love alive and keep nurturing it, et cetera, et cetera. And I talk about legacy and I talk about destiny. And for this context here, one of the favorite topics that I talk about is God. And I take time in that chapter to talk about how we not only need to have a fire for God, but we need to realize that religion's been feminized a great deal. And I don't use the word feminine as a negative automatically. But we all know the jokes that a man-eating lion would die in most churches, and that there aren't two genders; there are three: men, women, and preachers. And so, that's the challenge most men find, and that's why the statistics show us that they're drifting away from church, and we're losing them. So I do a riff on Jesus and who Jesus is, and the manly version of Jesus that we all need to hang on to. It's a theme I really care a lot about.
Guys, we're talking to Stephen Mansfield, and if you don't find this refreshing, you're dead. I mean, somebody needs to say it as clearly and as effectively as Stephen Mansfield does. The title of the book, and you ought to get it, Men on Fire, Restoring the Forces That Forge Noble Manhood. Hey, guys, don't go away. Like Jesus, we're coming back. was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. We're talking with Stephen Mansfield in his book. And if you have a men's group in your church, or you have a early morning Bible study where guys get together and you don't let women come, let me suggest you get this book and buy it for all the guys. And or if you are of the other gender, and there are only two, if you are of the other gender, you ought to buy this for your husband or your significant other. But this is a perfect book for a discussion of men. We're in a crisis point, and this book is well-timed and very needed.
Even before the break, you were answering Matthew's question, and you brought up two words, heritage and legacy. And I wanted to try to lump those together and ask you, I understand that you actually grew up in a military family. So I would feel pretty confident in suggesting that you have some very strong feelings about the subject of heritage. And that sort of leads me into the issue of legacy. And how does one think in terms of a legacy, about leaving a legacy, when they come from a background where they've not really had one, a legacy that gives them anything to be able to project leaving something that's helpful to somebody else, when they don't feel like they got anything that even faintly resembles a worthwhile? Does that make sense? Worthwhile legacy?
It does. And it's a great question. And I think that what I teach men is, you know, even if your family line is nothing but a bunch of scoundrels and criminals, you still have a heritage by virtue of the people group you're part of. There's nobility. There are heroes. There's greatness. You still have a heritage by virtue of the nation that you're part of. I tell this very quickly. In the book, I tell the story of a man who was fortunate and went on and got an MBA and what have you from an inner city situation. When he got older, he said, "Well, it's fine that I'm successful, but I don't have anything from my family. I don't have any sense of heritage." And he felt empty. His father was in prison. And I'll go ahead and give the story away. And that is that when his father died in prison, this guy went to the prison guard and said, "Is there anything you can tell me about my father? I never knew him. I just want something." And the guard basically said that your father saved money all year so that the kids who had to visit their parents in prison at Christmas time got a little gift. Well, this was revolutionary in the life of my friend. And he started a whole foundation. You all would, by the way, know the name of the foundation, but he's asked me not to connect it, you know, to the story for personal reasons. But he started a foundation that's done tremendous good because he had this one little grain, this one little bit of heritage that came down after everybody was dead, but he built on it. That's the important thing. So now he's leaving a legacy. There was a connection between heritage and legacy because he just found the diamond of the dunghill, as we often say. So it can be done. I know guys whose family lines, they can't name someone who wasn't in prison, but still they find it in their ethnicity, their heritage, the heritage of their people, and they build on it. They let it live in their soul, and it changes them. I think we're made for that. Mm.
Stephen, you talk about in the book about ritual. Can you tell us a little bit about the significance of that?
I'm a big believer in ritual. I believe it's not just for men, but any successful organization, any successful culture has ritual involved in it. And I start when it comes to men with the idea of initiating boys into a manly culture. There's that great maxim from the African villages. It says, if we do not initiate the boys, they will burn the village down just to feel its warmth. And that's true. Whether you're talking about street gangs or ISIS or skinheads, they all have initiation rites. Why? The military has initiation rites and it has rituals. And, you know, I lecture at West Point and the Naval Academy from time to time. You have to step around the rituals that are going on all the time that are confirming what they believe, confirming the nobility, confirming their sense of who they are as officers. So I'm a big believer in the Christian version of the bar mitzvah that our Jewish friends have. Around the time a child steps into adolescence, a young man, you initiate him, you bring him into the culture of men. I'm a big believer in the idea that when a young man graduates from high school, you don't just give him a gift and say, you know, have fun in college, but you have a ceremony or something that confirms him in manhood at that time. So rituals are absolutely essential. As we know in religion, by the way, we also see it in a broader culture, and a manly culture's got to have them.
You know, to kind of change the subject a little bit, I've had a surprise in my life. Obviously I'm old as dirt, and I look it. And I thought at this age that my ministry primarily would be for senior citizens. And the surprise I'm finding is that so many young people think of me in terms of fatherhood or grandfatherhood or an old guy that, and
or
so they're
great, great grandfatherhood.
But there's this desire, not only should we step up, but there's an openness to that. When your friend went to the prison, he was looking for something every man is looking for.
You bet. You bet. In fact, I tell men who are older, you know, if you think you're just going to float away on a sea of, you know, one man pleasures and television or what have you, you're crazy. We need you. We need you badly. At the same time, I tell younger men, guys, look around. We're going to have to father each other. You know, a lot of guys have this image of mentors and fathers as dudes wrapped in togas sitting under a tree dispensing wisdom, you know, and it's not the way it's going to go. But we need you older guys. We need younger guys. We need anybody who's willing to be responsible for the development of manhood and character in another man. So we need a culture that's inculcating this into each other's lives. But you put your finger right, Steve, on one of the things I'm concerned about is you cannot believe how the young men I'm working with need guys like you. We need the gray beards. We need the older guys. We need the guys who have screwed up and only recently learned the lessons of how to walk right, because the young men need to hear it fresh and raw. So yeah, and we've got to create that connection. And by the way, that's why we shouldn't be segmenting the generations in our churches, but bringing the men of all ages together.
Stephen, we got 30 seconds. Say something really profound or tell really a joke profound. Or sing a hymn or whatever. Say, what would you leave us with?
Men have lost noble manhood in our generation. We abandoned it, and we can get it back in our generation. It can be done in our generation. I have great confidence in it, and I don't want anybody thinking it's gone away permanently. We can reclaim it, and that's what we're all about.
Oh, Stephen, this hour has gone by fast, and you know, with everything you've written, we've been so impressed with it, but this is going to change a culture if enough people read it. Stephen Mansfield, and don't forget the name of the book, go get it. It's important. Men on Fire, Restoring the Forces That Forge Noble Manhood. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Such a privilege. Thank you.
You keep writing. We'll keep giving you a microphone, okay?
All right, baby. I'll take you up on that.
Guys, we're going to come back for a little bit on the other side of the break and tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. Meanwhile, sit back, relax, have some cookies and milk, and we'll return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Great hour with Stephen Mansfield. What he says is really important. And most guys are afraid to say it, at least to say it. And if they get away from others who disagree with them. And one of the things that men need to do is to say what needs to be said, even if we're ridiculed, made fun of, because we say it, because nobody's saying it. In our culture, they aren't saying it. But Stephen gives you hope that there are a bunch of people around the world that are saying it. We need an anchor. Women need an anchor. Men need an anchor. Kids need an anchor. And we've lost that. And we're paying a horrible price in terms of things that people believe, crazy stuff, knowing right from wrong, relationships, a whole, and it goes on and on and on. And so Stephen's book is an element that God has given us to fix those particular problems. Get it and give it to everybody you know. Kathy, I'm sure that you have a guest for next week.
And you're dead wrong.
This has been a difficult time for you, hasn't it?
Well, it was, you know, when was the Great Awakening? 18, yeah. Whatever. Well, the second Great Awakening was last week when I realized that there was not a, you know, a storage facility someplace that had all of the books that couldn't be delivered to our office while we were out because none of the publishers were working either. And Matthew was already with his truck. He was going to drive to wherever it was and pick them all up and load up the back of his truck and everything. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, I had an attack of sanity and went, whoa, there aren't any anywhere. We're in big trouble here. We got a couple of them scheduled, but they're a little bit off in the future. So we're doing our best, but.
Well, we can have a human.
Be stuck with us.
Maybe, Steve, you should just talk to us about biblical femininity next week. We balance the, balance the scales.
There you go. Well,
I mean, that's dangerous territory.
Ooh, I would like to hear
I'm
that.
I'm not a preacher anymore. Zach, that would be your responsibility. You can answer the letters that we'll get. As
you know better than that.
Right.
Guys, we're finally finished. Some of you are glad. Some of you will miss us. But however you feel about this program, whether you like it or dislike it, hate it or love it, deal with it. We're going to come back next week, same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. That gives you a wide, wide berth.